Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus at York College, City University of New York. I welcome you to this, March 9th edition of Vantage Point here on WBAI 99.5 FM in collaboration with ycradio.org. That's the York College radio station. And of course, they're tuned in and listening to what we do here on WBAI, an expansion, if you will, of our audience. Well, today we have a very, very, very important show. We're going to be talking about the election. Yeah, we're going to be talking about the Biden-Sanders dramatic turn in the presidential race. Biden versus Bernie, really. The dramatic turn in the presidential race. We'll be talking about that. And we have our dream team that's lined up, Earl Afari Hutchinson and Bill Fletcher. But before we do that, I just want to say a word about this coronavirus pandemic that is now being described at by CNN. Pandemic simply means it's an epidemic that is in several countries. So it doesn't mean it's any more serious. It just means that it's in several countries, but it does mean that, according to Dr. Sanjay Gupta at CNN, who I think is a very credible voice, that people should be, that the country, the nation should be taking certain precautions. So I just want to just say, and of course, Governor Cuomo has declared a state of emergency, and because it is serious, but people should, you know, not panic and just take certain common sense steps. Number one, many sources were saying the masks don't work. So it doesn't prevent you from getting the coronavirus. So having a mask on doesn't really help. So you can kind of forget that and save your money. As it's the other way around, it's really for the patient to have one on so that it doesn't come out as opposed to coming in, is what I understand. But the most important thing is be accountable. Let's be accountable to each other. For example, you know, shield your mouth when you cough, right? I mean, just if you got a cough, shield your mouth. As they say, and this doesn't sound like much, but wash your hands frequently. And you can of course get the Prel or whatever other sanitizer you can, you know, get of course. But they said just washing your hands with soap and water, ironically, seems to be something that works. You know, wash your hands frequently. And then, if you have any symptoms, this is the most important part. Do not go to work. Stay at home. Call your doctor. Find out what you should do. But if you got symptoms, stay at work. Stay at home. Don't go to work. Just reporting a case right now, I think maybe here in New York, where the father was either the father or the daughter. I guess it was the daughter who contracted the virus. And then he was asked to self-quarantine. No, he decides to know. He goes and takes the other daughter to a function at a high school, now exposing all of those people to the virus. I mean, come on. I mean, this is idiotic behavior. I mean, what gives you a sense that you can just do what you want to do? And that's a bad thing. So now they got to track all those people and whatever. Just saw Senator Gildebrand on talking about the fact that many people, they need to have testing centers, you know, so people can really be tested and feel comfortable about that. But just use common sense. Let's be accountable to each other. And at the end of the day, you know, you can self-quarantine. Be happy to self-quarantine. You know, you don't have to, you know, just self-quarantine. Let's have some discipline. Let's take care of each other. And that would be extremely helpful. So I thought we should just start with those comments because, you know, I think we all have to be concerned and all of us should share in this effort to make sure that we're safe and that we'll get through this. And for God's sakes, we certainly don't need this crazy man in the White House you know, giving all kind of conflicting advice concerned with his political career more than it is the health of the American people. This is why the defeat of the Orange Man is imperative. Well, we're going to have this conversation again on Bernie, Biden versus Bernie, the dramatic turn in the presidential race. And after which, we're also going to talk about the March 7th rally that we just concluded at the House of the Lord Church. And we're going to open up the phones, and those will be the two topics that we'll be talking about. But we're delighted to welcome to our microphones today and to the show, no strangers, my dream team, Earl Afari Hutchinson, who is the producer of the Hutchinson Report online town hall meeting. And that is with KPFK, I finally got it right, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles. And, of course, Bill Fletcher, who is with Arise. His radio show is Arise, and he's with our affiliate WPFW 89.3 in Washington, D.C. Earl Afari Hutchinson and Bill Fletcher, welcome to Vantage Point.
Always a pleasure.
Absolutely.
Well, let's get right to it. We got a lot to talk about. My first question is just a very simple one. It ain't complicated. I just need to ask each of you in a succinct way, what happened? And I'll start with you, Earl. What happened?
Well, I have to tell you, Bill and Ron, I guess Bernie's asking the same thing. What did happen? We spent a lot of money. I'm just thinking Texas now. We spent a lot of money in Texas, about $4 million. We blanketed the state with ads, promotions. We had a lot of enthusiasm, had a lot of rallies there. We thought we had a good segment of the Latino vote, and of course the youth vote. We thought we had it all in Texas. Texas was in the Bernie camp, it seemed, and then something happened. Along comes Joe Biden. Biden spends almost no time in Texas, has no money, really. He goes to Houston for one small fundraiser, and that's about it. But yet, when you look at all the demographics, African-Americans, Latinos, youth, by the way, the rural people, the farm vote, suburban white women that are educated, and, of course, blue-collar labor. When you look at all the key and crucial demographics, Biden came out either on top or very close to the top, and, of course, he wins Texas and, eight, nine other states. So I think two things, two takeaways, at least for me, from that. One, there was a level of excitement about Bernie and anticipation and expectation, which obviously didn't happen, particularly with Latinos in the youth vote. The second thing is, which means brings me to number two, Joe Biden's a known commodity. I know he's been beat up on from left, right, center, everybody, every place else, but you can't change one fact. He's been out there a long time. He had the 8 years with Obama. He's got good labor ties. Union ties, and certainly the African-American community, and now we're seeing the Latinos. So you're dealing with that known commodity, and I think it's really tough, really, to get around. It's almost like, Ron and Bill, when you're going up against an incumbent. Incumbents, unless they just royally screw up, almost never lose. And so, in a sense, Biden is almost a de facto incumbent that Bernie is going up against. So it's a tough one, given all the seeming advantages that Bernie had: money, youth, a lot of enthusiasm, certainly a lot of momentum behind him, a lot of people that love him. And he's got a track record, and he's been out there, too, but not like Biden. So I think the coalition, the Democratic base, the party establishment finally found someone they could rally behind. And that tradition that's been there of going for that known commodity, I think it was a major liability. In fact, we're going into another Super Tuesday. I expect, quite frankly, the same result.
Right. Well, Bill, again, the same question, because, just going into South Carolina, there was expectations that Bernie would do better with African-Americans across the board. But also, he was leading in the national polls and, in fact, in several of the battleground states. Bernie Sanders was doing quite well. So what happened?
Ron, I think, as almost always, I agree with Earl. Right? But I'm going to go further. One thing that happened is that the opposition collapsed into Biden. In other words, you know, you were going into Super Tuesday, and there was still a diversity of candidates. And then on the verge of Super Tuesday, the field narrowed. And it narrowed in very predictable ways. And my guess is that there was some arm twisting that went on within the Democratic Party to get people to back out and to support Biden. So I think that that's one factor, that you had these folks collapsing together that had not been anticipated. And this is one of the reasons that I think that people needed to be very careful, particularly when Sanders said a few weeks ago, whoever went into the convention with the most votes should get the nomination. And people started picking up on that. I thought that that was very dangerous. It broke with the rules, but you can see how easily the script flips. And so I think that was one factor. I think another factor that we have talked about, three of us have talked about, is that I continue to be underwhelmed by the strategic direction that Sanders takes when it comes to African Americans. That, yes, he's better than he was in 2016. No question about that. But what I don't see, and I have not seen it, maybe I'm just missing it, I don't see the kind of strategic advisors with him that are helping to build at the base the kind of connections with African-American leadership and Latino leadership that I think is so badly needed. So I just want to add that to what Earl was raising.
Well, I want to chime in on that latter point, because, yes, we've talked about that a lot. And I think, because this is for the benefit of our broader audience as well, because I know, Earl, just before Super Tuesday, you said you were going with your heart, not your head, and you decided to openly endorse Bernie Sanders. And I don't know, maybe that was the curse. But anyway.
You know what? Blame Earl. Earl did it. What can I tell you? You can't win them all.
Yeah, you can't win them all. There were some clear indications of that. First of all, Bernie just could not seem to bring himself to, and here's what I think is important. It's not what's on your website. It's not what you sort of say in the coffee clutches or in the one-on-one meetings. It's what do you say in the debates, and what do you say in your stump speeches? Is race integrated in that way? And, you know, gentrification, Marshall Plan, all reparations. In fact, he's wobbly on reparations. He's for it, but then he's quoted in an interview, well, we don't need to be almost dismissive. And people pick up on that. I mean, every presidential candidate was in Selma but Bernie Sanders. Now, he went racing off to California because by that time, maybe the tea leaves were clear that something was happening. But if you're going to deal with race, and this is the 55th anniversary of Bloody Sunday, why are you the only candidate not in Selma? I know that the speech that he delivered yesterday was, people were talking about him doing a speech on race because people were concerned about him not being able to talk much about race. So they said, let's have him do a speech on race. And they said they wanted to do it in Jackson, Mississippi. But the point is, they were going to have him, he was going to do the speech after Super Tuesday, after South Carolina, as opposed to before South Carolina. Now, I ask anybody in our listening audience, how much sense did that make? I mean, you don't have to be a political strategist of sort of monumental proportions to understand. If you're trying to reach the black vote, South Carolina is Biden's so-called firewall. And, you know, you got an influential political leader like Jim Clyburn there. Why are you not? Why didn't you not make your speech on race prior to South Carolina and Super Tuesday as opposed to after? I mean, that made absolutely no sense. I know that people were saying to him things like, why don't you indicate to the electorate that if you are the nominee, you don't have to name, you don't have to say I'm doing this person. But I am going to appoint or select an African-American woman to be my running mate, and drop names like Kamala Harris, who is now opportunistically, you know, after California has come out and endorsed him, or Barbara Lee or Stacey Abrams. Didn't happen. What did Biden do? He goes to South Carolina and he says, we've never had a woman to be on the Supreme Court of the United States. If I'm elected, I will appoint a woman, an African-American woman. I mean, do you don't think that resonates to black women everywhere? Right. They heard that. And then finally, you know, Jesse Jackson came out yesterday. Well, he was one of the early persons to endorse Jesse Jackson. How come he was not talking about the fact that he was in, you know, Chicago around the Cicero stuff, working on issues of racial equity and racial justice? He indeed was one of the earliest supporters of Reverend Jesse Jackson. That would have resonated. But he just couldn't seem to break away from a mechanistically from the stump speech to incorporate those factors. And I guess the last thing I'm going to put in is the whole issue of the head versus the heart. You know, people respond to the head, but they also, and by and large, in many respects, also responds to the heart. Do you connect with people? And Bernie is heavy on head, but he just is not an empathetic messenger in terms of an ability to just connect with folks. I just wanted to throw those concrete examples of how he did not connect with black folks sufficiently. Obviously, he connected with some, but in order to broaden the base in a way that would now allow him to be embarrassed across the board and really not make any more significant, not much more than what happened with Hillary Clinton.
Ron, let me, a couple of things on that. You know, Bill has said something. I want to piggyback on something I've heard Bill say many, many times. And I think he's absolutely right, spot on this. Bill, I've heard you say over and over again, we've had these conversations, and you repeated it on my show, that one of the areas that you've always, even from day one, you've had trouble with Bernie on is who's advising him, the kind of advisors he's getting. I'm not naming names, I'm not finger pointing, but just simply what kind of, forget advisors, advice he's getting. Does he have a team around him that can talk about the things, Ron, that you just laid out, reparations, appointments, nominations, a running mate, specifically health disparities vis-a-vis education disparities vis-a-vis African Americans, and needless to say, the major, major crisis, mass incarcerations. We're talking about African Americans primarily, Hispanics, but African Americans. Are you talking day in and day out about these issues? So, Bill, when you mentioned, and you said this several times, does he have advice and advisors at the same, whispering in his ear, Bernie, when you speak, you've got to say that. You got to break out from the billionaires in Wall Street. The billionaires in Wall Street. Okay, we got that. We got that. That's not enough. We got that. But that's not enough. We heard that for 4 years. That's not enough. If you're going to go after the African-American vote, and as we well know, we've all agreed on this because it's indisputable, you're not going to win the White House without the African-American vote. Even in those five states that that Trump barely won, if we've said it a million times, you had enough blacks in Detroit, you had enough blacks in Milwaukee, you had enough blacks in Philly and Pittsburgh and Miami and Jacksonville and those states and Columbus, Ohio and Cincinnati and Cleveland that didn't vote. If they had just went out and voted in the numbers they did in 4 years earlier, we wouldn't even be on the phone now talking about this. Hillary would have been president. So, Bill, you know, Ron, you're absolutely right. If you're not talking black issues, let's break it down, black issues, you're not going anywhere. You're just not going anywhere. Biden understands that. Bernie doesn't get it.
Right. Let me ask you another question. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead,
Bill. Can I just jump in right here? There's one other factor that I think that I want to add here, and that's about the united front. See, I think that Bernie is walking this fine line, and his supporters are like all over the map on this. Is Bernie leading an insurrection in the Democratic Party, or is he a left leader of a united front against Trump? And the two are very different.
Right.
And what we need right now, I would argue, is a left leader of the United Front against Trump.
I agree.
Someone that right. articulates a broad vision and says, I'm ready to work with all kinds of people. And that relates to what you're raising, Ron, about sending certain signals about who you're interested in as a running mate. I think that many of his supporters are more interested in leading the insurrection against the Democratic Party establishment and making that breakthrough, and are losing some of the focus. I mean, like, for example, the attacks on Warren. Now, Warren, in my opinion, made a whole lot of mistakes, including that idiotic comment that she made about Bernie allegedly saying that a woman couldn't win. I mean, things like that. It was really stupid. But the attacks on her supporters by some Sanders supporters, assuming that they're not agents of Eric Prince, right? You know, this is not helpful.
Right.
This does not help what we need to do. So I would add that in terms of what I'm wondering whether that's a perception that people have.
Right. Yeah. And you make a very good, a very good point, Bill. And in that regard, for example, if you're an adept political leader, even coming from the left, because at the end of the day, even to take our agenda where we want it, we have to broaden the base. So it seems to me there were two issues that also I want you to comment on, one of which may have been so powerful that nothing could have overcome it. One was the concern about, and they're related, Ashley, it's the down ballot issues. You know, in terms of people who in those districts that, you know, the Trump districts that were flipped and so forth. And, you know, but this is a legitimate concern. It's not that that's not, it is a legitimate concern. But, and there are ways in which you could, it seems to me there's ways in which you could also reach out to folks in those districts and to the constituents in those districts and message in a way that says, as you're pointing out, because the other major contention, it was a poll that just came out today, saying that 70% of people, their number one concern is defeat Trump. Mm-hmm. Defeat Trump. Who can defeat Trump was their 70%. Only 30% were down with the question of who I agree with on the issues. And so that means that even some Bernie people may have shifted to Biden reluctantly because they think that Trump, that Biden is the best person to beat Trump. So these are kind of interrelated issues, but it may well be that that was so much ingrained in people's consciousness that maybe Bernie couldn't have done anything to overcome that.
Well,
I think he could've.
Go ahead, Bill.
No, I do think he could have overcome it, Ron. So I'm speaking as a Bernie supporter. I think that he could have overcome it, but I think it necessitates an approach that does not seem instrumental and transactional. That Bernie needs to and should have been indicating that we really do have a broad tent, that this campaign is not a campaign for democratic socialism. This is a campaign of progressive movement for change in the United States.
Right.
The fact that he's a democratic socialist is interesting and his background, but it's just like in 1960, JFK was the first Roman Catholic to win. He wasn't running to introduce a Catholic theocracy or the Vatican domination of the United States. It happened that he was Catholic. And I think it's really important. And I think, again, some of Bernie's supporters make a mistake. Yes, he's a democratic socialist, but this is not a campaign for democratic socialism. This is a campaign for a broad progressive front against Trump and the right-wing populace. That's the principal thing. And I think that Bernie should have been emphasizing this and can emphasize this as a way of making some of those folks that are in down ballot elections feel more comfortable with his leadership.
Well, I was just going to add on a couple of things about that, Ron and Bill. It's not surprising. You know, Ron, you mentioned that recent poll about 70%. You know, that's not new. From day one, the narrative has been, who can beat Trump? And I'm talking about within the Democratic Party and among big D and little d Democrats. So the poll just reflects something that's been an undercurrent, a strong undercurrent from day one. In fact, if it wasn't, there would be no Joe Biden. That's why we have a Joe Biden. Right. And that's why, to an extent, Bloomberg jumped in, too, because he read the tea leaves and said, we being the majority of Democrats, want to beat Donald Trump. We're not interested in democratic socialism. We're not interested in all the esoteric to us things about philosophy and even politics and point of view. We just want to get this guy out of there. That's been the dominant thing. Biden plays to that. From day one, that's all he's talked about. No matter what issue he goes to, he comes back to, I'm your guy. I can beat Trump. Second thing, progressives. Let's take a second to look at progressives. I've had to, Bill and Ron, you may take odds with me on this one. In the light of what's happened the last week, I've had to reassess the role of progressives. And here's how. I just assumed, as an article of faith, before last week, that if it's Biden, he's going to have a progressive on the ticket with him. I'm not so sure anymore. And let me tell you why. Let me tell you my thinking on this. Progressives generally, quote unquote, real progressives, not just those that, you know, are in and out on this, but they actually have politics, have had, been involved with activities and organizations and been on the front line. Typically, when you look at that demographic, East Coast, West Coast, especially West Coast, but East Coast, New York City, L.A., D.C., and so forth. There's a whole big country out there. And I've never lost sight of the fact when you go out to the heartland of America, it's a whole different mindset out there. I'm not sure progressives, you know, in places that we're going to have to win with the mindset of the Electoral College, those five states, I'm not sure progressives are really going to be the potent force and the necessary force in those areas. What I do think is be able to message, like you say, for Biden even, Bill, but those demographics persuaded me that you got a guy that's centrist. Is he a centrist that came in and swept all the demographics, including some of Trump's demographic? So I'm thinking to myself, you know what? Maybe that has changed the game a bit. Back to a Joe Biden.
Mm. Well, Bill, your reaction to that?
I think I would disagree. I get what you're saying, Earl. I think he needs a progressive. But I think that there's different kinds of progressives. And I think that as we saw, you know, back in the Jackson campaign of 88 with Reverend Jackson, as well as other campaigns, we need someone who is rooted among working people.
Right.
That's the critical thing in terms of a progressive, someone that gets that working people are suffering. And this is where it gets complicated, that the policies that were articulated under Bill Clinton and Barack Obama were not necessarily and certainly not consistently to the advantage of working people. These trade agreements, for example. I think that people need to feel that at least there is an ear in the White House that will pick up on this and that their concerns are going to resonate, as opposed to that this will be simply the replacement of Trump with someone who may be kinder, might be more sensitive on certain issues, but not necessarily sensitive on what's crushing working people. And so that's the distinction that I would make.
And I agree with that, because I think from the very beginning, my whole thought, and I've been articulating this, is that Trump defeating the orange man is like the minimum goal, because returning to normalcy, to me, if normalcy is the era of Barack Obama, it's better than if it had been whoever he defeated. Now, I can't even remember now, or Bush or whomever it was, or McCain.
McCain.
Better than that. But this was moment, it seems to me, that we could have gone much, much further. And so I think the progressive agenda that Bernie's articulating And I would say even Elizabeth Warren. I mean, if Bernie's 10, I would say she's probably 8.5. You might disagree with me on that, but I think she's pretty ideologically aligned. Mm-hmm. When she talked about big structural change, I think that's what we really need. But I think there's a way in which you can talk about big structural change. You can talk about these things in a language that doesn't really frighten people. And Reverend Jackson was trying to help in that regard. He wrote an article called, even on democratic socialism, he said the key word or something is emphasis democratic. I think getting people to understand, we're not talking about Soviets, this, that, you know. And again, Bernie was not particularly good at that kind of messaging either. I think you need a progressive on the ticket, because the other side is what we have to worry about now is losing the energy of the Bernie supporters, which is not insignificant. That's a whole block of people who may well decide we didn't win, Bernie didn't win, so therefore we're going third party, which they have a right to do, and make that choose that option if they decide, or just stay home because they feel that so disillusioned and defeated, particularly because of the way in which these forces coalesced together, because that's the way politics works, unfortunately. That's how it works. You know, so I'm worried that if you don't have a progressive on the ticket or someone, first of all, I think it has to be a woman. I think it has to be a woman of color. I would prefer an African American woman, but it's got to be somebody who's a progressive, who can articulate the message of the agenda that Bernie was raising. Which comes to the last question I want to pose before we have to move on, and that is, what is the future now? You know, I mean, unless there's some miracle that could happen, and miracles do happen, Michigan does not look good. The map does not favor Bernie going down the stretch. In fact, today, Earl, you have a piece out that's essentially raising the question, will Bernie contribute to the defeat of the reelection of Trump? Because you're worried that if this goes on and on and on and there's a bloodbath back and forth, that it could really be detrimental and so forth. So what is the future, really, of the progressive movement after this point?
Bill?
I think he has to stay in, Ron and Earl. I think he has to I'm obviously not in favor of a bloodbath, but I think that so as far as I'm concerned, one, it ain't over till it's over.
Right.
And then two, I believe that Biden should not get a pass, and that there needs to be pressure. And it's sort of like what the three of us have talked about in the past in terms of the problems and the way that people related to Obama in giving him a pass after he was elected. And I feel like right now we have an opportunity not to give anyone a pass, but to stay there and to keep the pressure on so that if Bernie doesn't get the nomination and Biden does, that Biden understands and does not take for granted his left flank.
That's right.
Why I think that he's got to stay there.
Well, you know, I think, Ron, I do take some issue with you on this one. I'm looking for a vice president. It doesn't have to be a woman. And quite frankly, I may be a heretic on this. It doesn't have to necessarily be a progressive. I want a vice president that can go in those five states and talk to those demographics there, perhaps peel off a little bit of Trump's base, just a little bit, just enough to make a difference. That's what I'm looking for, someone that's experienced, someone that has been there, someone that can hit the ground running. I'd love a progressive. Don't misunderstand me. But I also want someone that can really, really talk the talk and walk the walk in those states. The other thing, I don't think, Ron, at least to me, I don't think defeating Trump is a minimal goal. It's not a minimal goal to me. Trump represents something else in this that we have never seen. You have to probably go back to the Civil War for this one. He's not Reagan. He's not Bush. They were rock-solid conservative, but they were traditional Republicans. They played within the rules. This guy represents the greatest existential threat to our nation and our communities. Another 4 years, unbounded, unfettered, unchained, can do whatever the heck he wants with absolutely no checks and balances. That is beyond scary. That is beyond dystopian. It's not a minimal goal to defeat this guy. And I think
by the way, we would agree with that. I mean, I don't disagree with you, but I'm saying I want to do that. And I've always said that. But I also want to take the moment to articulate a vision beyond that, because I think, to me, that's a
But Ron, what I did say, remember, I said, ideally, I'd love to see a progressive. Already said that. I agree on that. But if we can't get that, then we have to go to plan B. And just a final thing on that. I think at this point in time, the only thing about Biden I'm looking at beyond the existential threat of Trump, he gives us some breathing space. And, Bill, I agree with you 100%. You redefined, well, you didn't really redefine, but you made it clear, a progressive that has, that's in the working class, the labor movement's grounded. You know, we're in agreement there. If you can get that, that's fine. I haven't seen a lot of that, but if it's there, it's fine. But, you know, just at the end of the day, we do want to keep the progressive vision going. We do want to have the left flank. We do want to keep the pressure on Biden. But the only thing I'm a bit concerned about, Ron, because you mentioned my article, just don't give Trump and the GOP, not that they need it, any more talking points and ammunition. You don't need to do that. Be very careful about that.
I agree. Yeah, I
agree.
Okay,
well, my dream team has spoken. That is Earl O'Fry Hutchinson. Again, he's with our sister station KPFK and 90.7 FM in Los Angeles. He has the on-air town hall meeting. And, of course, Arise, which is 89.3 in Washington, D.C. on WPFW. That's Bill Fletcher. That's my dream team. Thank you both for being on with us today. We could have gone on for the rest of the show, but I got some other things I need to talk to about as well. And I'm sure we're going to have to revisit this in about another 30 days to see what's happening and what's going on. So thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
All right, Ron and Bill, take care now. Bye now.
Yeah, you too, man. Later.
All right. Okay. Well, we're going to open up the phones to get your reactions. You can start to line up at 212-209-2877. We're going to go straight through today. But I do need to take a minute to just thank everyone who responded to our call for the rally at the House of the Lord Church on this past March the 7th. It was a spirited rally. The audience, perhaps more than I, not as many as I would have hoped, but I actually think to some degree this coronavirus thing had kind of slowed some people down. And there's been a way in which we haven't done a rally at the House of the Lord Church in quite a while. We wanted to pack the house. We didn't pack the house, but we had a very good audience, and it was very spirited and very strong. And we certainly want to thank Gary Bird, you know, for helping to get the word out. King Downey, I reconnected with him, and that's great. Both he and Gary Bird are committed to this long-term process of working with us to push to make the State of the Black World Conference the a major political and economic success, which we were talking about. Mimi Rosenberg actually showed up, and Mimi was in the house. We thank her for coming and staying throughout the program. We gave several shout-outs to our WBA audience while we were there. And, of course, I also have to give a shout-out to the Open Line team on KISS FM because they were involved. Is it KISS FM? No, it's not KISS FM. It's WBLS. Who chimed in and helped out as well. All of our speakers showed up, Dr. Julius Garvey, Monique Bandelli, Barbara King, Dr. Monique Swift, Frederica Bay, Larry Hamm, and, of course, our Assemblyman Charles Barron. It was so good to see so many longtime friends and allies show up. But more important than anything else, I was so moved by the listeners of Vantage Point who came and say, I listen to you, Professor, every week, and I, you know, we hear the discussions and so forth. It was very moving to see listeners come and to say they are supporters of WBAI and they are supporters of Vantage Point. I thank you so much for coming out, those of you. And we want to thank all of those who contributed as well, because this was about really trying to build a bridge. For the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, as we are trying to maintain viability as we get to some grants that we need to get and so forth. But the real goal is trying to turn the State of the Black World Conference into the kind of project which will enable us to not only survive but thrive. in that regard, I was also impressed with a number of people who volunteered, you know, young black professionals who came up. He said, like, we want to help out. One guy has a series of restaurants. Another guy's a lawyer. Another person is working in the creative world. I mean, there were people who said, we want to help. And I really, really appreciate that. And we want others to do likewise. This is the organizing project, as I said in my presentation, which we're going to hopefully put up online in the next about 10 days it's going to take to get it up online. It's the organizing project of my life, Ashley. The whole idea of getting 600 to 800 people from around the country to come to the State of the Black World Conference in Newark, December 2nd through the 8th. It seems a long time off, but it is an organizing project. And we want to get at least 200 to 300 people from the greater New York and New Jersey area to, in fact, be supportive in that regard. And we need people to not only be contributors, and you can go to our website, ibw21.org, ibw21.org. If you wanted to come and couldn't make it for whatever reason, you can still support by going to ibw21.org. But we really also need volunteers. Listen to me. We need volunteers. Dr. Monique Swift, who did this just incredible presentation, testimonial. And by the way, Dr. J, I forgot to mention his name, I guess, Dr. Leonard Jeffries, he was incredible too. We really, really need volunteers to help build a strong local organizer host committee in Newark. Newark people are listening. We have people who came from Newark. So here's what we need you to do. Go to the website, ibw21.org, ibw21.org. And if you want to be a part of the local host committee in Newark, go to the section that says contact. There's a link that says contact us, or it says contact. And there you will see State of the Black World Conference, abbreviated as State of the Black World Conference 5. You click there. And then you just leave a message, send your email address and all the, and fill it out, and then leave a message saying, I want to help in Newark. I want to be a part of the host committee, whatever. Similarly, if you want to help and volunteer just on the New York side or just be a part of this effort, do likewise and send a similar message. So, again, I'll repeat that, ibw21.org, ibw21.org, go to the contact link on the front page. And by the way, if you want to see images of the State of the Black World Conference 4 in Newark, New Jersey, on the right side there, there's a panel. You can click there and you can see how incredible State of the Black World Conference 4 was. But leave a message. I want to help. I want to volunteer in Newark. I want to volunteer in New York, or you just may want to say there are other ways in which we need all kinds of people, events planners, people who know how to do promotions, people who can do social media stuff. We need a lot of help in order to make this happen, and we were not ashamed to ask for your help. We concluded by saying, up you mighty race, you can accomplish what you will, because we did this in the spirit of the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. So now we're going to go to the phones, and we'll take your questions, comments, and so forth. Let's do rapid fire. You can do it either on your reminiscences of what happened or your reflections on what happened at the March 7th rally. I suspect most people are going to want to talk about what happened in terms of the recent election at Super Tuesday and what you see going forward. Let's go immediately to our listening audience. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, well, I can hear you. Good afternoon.
Hi, this is Mary. I am calling from East Orange, New Jersey. How are you, Dr. Dan?
Oh, I'm doing fine, East Orange, New Jersey.
Yes, okay. I feel this way. Really serious, just talking spade to spade. I think there was a statement that was made not a long time ago, but someone made a statement that the Republicans robbed the bank and the Democrats drive the getaway car. And that's what I think happened in this election with Biden. There is just no way. This man, to me, is not qualified to be president. He has demonstrated in his speakings around, you know, going to different, you know, places to do his spiel, that he's kind of slipping in terms of senility. And I just cannot see. And I think that this is a cohorted effort to get him up there and to get Trump back in, because he represents more of the establishment in terms of big banks, big pharma, businesses. As Bernie Sanders stated, that he has a lot of big billionaires supporting him. So
Who do you think Bernie Sanders is going to support if he doesn't win?
He's going to go with Biden, just like when he was working with
him. Why do you think that?
Because they are part of Bernie Sanders, I love that man. He's just that type of person. He will say, listen, guys.
Let's get beyond the sentimentality. There's a difference. I want to explain something to you and to the whole audience. Bernie is the left progressive candidate, right? And I would argue on class issues, he is the most progressive candidate. But to make the mistake of thinking that Biden is the same as Trump is extraordinarily off the point. On many of the issues, I mean, Obamacare, living wage, many of those issues, Biden are for those issues. It's just that Bernie is better on those issues than Biden is. But both of them, in fact, any of those Democratic candidates, any of them, were all better than the orange man. And so at the end of the day, even though Biden was not my choice, Bernie was not my choice to the degree that I really wanted to see a woman come forward. That was my conviction. I wanted to see women. I don't understand why it is a woman can't, this whole aversion to this. I mean, this is my own personal view. But at the end of the day, as we just talked about it, if it is Biden, the question is the threat that he poses is such that people will have to make a decision, his warts and knots and whatever notwithstanding, what is the choice that people will have? That's the thing that we have to think about. Look, appreciate
your
call.
They're not going to choose Joe Biden.
We're going to have the orange man back.
That's right. They're not, because I mean,
what are you going to do? No. Let's make what will
I,
you
what
do?
I want to do. I wanted Bernie to win.
If it's not Bernie, what are you going to do?
I'm going to still vote for Biden, but I'm...
Okay, well, that's all I need to know. That's the point. Yes, that's the point that we have to make.
I'm not going
to
vote for him, but I really believe that the overall majority is...
Yeah, but our task is to understand the existential threat and to work and to persuade people to do just what you just said. Biden may not have been
Can
their
I ask
choice.
You a personal
no,
question?
No. We have to go on. I have to get some other calls in. Let's get our next caller in. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hello. I'm on Vantage Point.
You're on Vantage Point. Yes, you are.
You doing good? Good night. Well, you know, I heard the brother at the first part of the show, and he's saying the black vote, the Democrat getting into office is contingent on the black vote. But the Democrats don't do anything to earn the black vote. We put Bill Clinton in office, and what did he do? He passed a crime bill. He did away with the welfare reform, the three strikes in your house. He did nothing for black folk. Any of the Democratic Party, Obama got in there. Black people lost more money, lost more wealth during Obama than any president in history.
Was Obama responsible for the collapse that happened in
people
lost wealth because of he inherited. He stepped right into one of the greatest crises in American history in terms of the collapse of Wall Street. He did not create that. That helped wipe out wealth. That's what wiped out the wealth.
He didn't create it, but he put the blame on poor people, on people of color. He said the reason the economy collapsed is people taking out mortgages that they couldn't even afford anyway, which wasn't true. These people were defrauded.
Well, they were defrauded. There's no question about that. I don't remember him saying that. My argument against Obama was that he should have done more to help Main Street as opposed to Wall Street. That's my critique of him. But at the end of the day, let me just ask you the critical question. If it's not Bernie, because it's down to Bernie and Biden, what are you going to do?
I would have to pick a third candidate. I'll
okay.
pick myself.
All right. Okay, all right, good.
You know, how are you gonna put Bernie in there when he's did so much damage to people?
Bernie?
You know, I really couldn't.
Oh, you meant to say Biden?
Yeah, Biden. Why are you gonna put Biden in there? He's did so much.
So you would prefer to have the orange man back in the White House over Biden?
I couldn't vote for Joe Biden.
Okay, all right. Let's move to our next caller. Let's go to our next caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
No callers yet.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, 212-209-2877. We have about 5 minutes to get some other callers in. 212-209-2877. You can call and express your opinion right now. And this is good. I'm glad to have this discussion, glad to have this debate, exchange of views. Because, I mean, if you look at this existential threat that, I mean, and I disagree with Earl. I'm more with Bill, so to speak, Bill Fletcher, in saying that I really would want to see a progressive on the ticket. I really want to see this progressive agenda projected. So I want both. I want to take out the orange man, and I want to advance a progressive agenda. And I think that there were candidates who were best equipped to do that, and those candidates.
Okay, Professor, we got two more calls.
Those candidates, I think, were both Bernie and Elizabeth Warren. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon. In response, I guess, to all the same sentiment, I definitely would rather Bernie Sanders, but the thing is not necessarily that the orange man is the existential threat. It's the fact that if cheating and things are going on, then we have to address that as well. And to sit back again, as like in 2016, and let somebody cheat to get their nominee in is just as much as existential threat as the orange man. So I would suggest that people either write in Bernie Sanders or...
Well, wait. Well, first of all, yeah, whatever. I mean, it's down to Bernie and Biden. So I know that many of our audience are obviously going to be for Bernie. It does not look like Bernie is going to be able to pull it off. And some of it is self-inflicted, frankly. It's just not the establishment collapsed because that's the way politics works. And at the end of the day, the whole notion that you would bring more people to the voting place, more young people, the data does not show objectively that that was happening. It also shows that making the dent that you needed to make in the African-American community did not happen. And black people
yet. We are projecting opposition.
Yeah. But when is it going to happen?
Well, that's the thing. If you can't wait, if no one is patient, if no one tries,
we're going to Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana. That's where black folks are.
If you can't do
South Carolina, if you can't do those states, when do you expect this miracle to occur?
Well, hold on. I didn't finish. We just had Jesse Jackson come in support of Bernie. So the thing is, things are changing, but we have to allow things to change. We make efforts, and it's the smart person that would allow, okay, let's see what happens. If we project all the time and go on supposition, that's where we make mistakes. That's what happened last time. Oh, Hillary Clinton was the sure candidate. She was most qualified, and she lost. And that's the end of that story. So the point is that sometimes we have to let intellect take a little bit of a back seat and let processes occur and watch what really happens. We're not gods. We're all trying to do the right thing, so we have to let the efforts bear themselves out.
I agree with you. I'm a political strategist, however, and I do understand organizing. And I do understand that if you're trying to organize the black community, you don't make a speech on race after Super Tuesday and after South Carolina. You do it before. You show up in Selma because you're trying to indicate that. So there, all of these errors that Bill and I and Earl talked about are real. And unfortunately, they were very problematic. And then we're going to be facing a real choice here. Do we have time for one more caller? Or do we have one more caller?
No, that's pretty much it.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll pick it up again next week. But also, there's the existential reality that we're also pushing to make State of the Black World Conference the biggest, the strongest, the most politically successful and economically successful in history. Go to the website, ibw21.org, ibw21.org. people from Newark, if you want to volunteer for the local host committee, go to that section that says contact. You go to that link and put in your information and say, I want to support by volunteering to be on the host committee in Newark. You can do the same thing in terms of being helping out here in New York. We really, really need your support to get it done. Thanks to all the people who came out and supported us on March the 7th. Thanks to WBAI for providing the opportunity. And we'll see you again next week here on Vantage Point.